Welcome to the SOAP Bible Study Series from Oak Tree Community Church in South Bend, Indiana. We're starting a new book this week, and this is going to be so short, we're going to start it. In a couple of weeks, we'll end it and get to start something new.
This is not three weeks long. Yeah, 3 weeks.
And sometimes we do really, really long ones. And this is not it.
Yeah. So the book is Ecclesiastes in the Old Testament.
Only 12 chapters. So we can do that in 3 weeks.
Yes, we can. So the first question is always, what does the book mean, right? What is the book about? You want to take that one?
Nope.
Okay. So the word Ecclesiastes, he'll tell me I'm wrong, but it's a preacher or a teacher who is gathering an audience for a lesson.
Yeah, so this is one of those great, fun fact, some people don't know this, that most of the names of our Old Testament books, a lot of them come from the Greek translation, not the actual Hebrew Bible. So if you just chop off the last four letters, you see ekklesia. You're like, oh, that might sound familiar. Isn't that like the Greek word for church? It is. It means a congregation or an assembly. So the Ecclesiastes, in Hebrew, the word is kohelet. It's the teacher. It's the preacher. Yeah. And so that's the very first line, the words of the teacher,
right.
The preacher.
Right. And we also see teacher kind of throughout.
Right. And so that's what Ecclesiastes really is, the words of the one who is speaking to the assembly or the congregation.
Okay. So written about 950 BC, it's like, wow, just from dates a long time ago.
Yeah.
So letter was written by a guy by the name of Solomon. He was a king of Israel. Mm-hmm. When Israel was united, he was the third king, third and last king of a united kingdom. And kind of the cool thing was, it was at the economic peak.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, Solomon had it going.
Yeah.
He had other countries paying him tributes. He was getting cedar from Lebanon. I mean, importing things, exporting things.
Yeah. His navy went all over the world. There's actually records of his navy touching foot on other continents.
Right.
Just all over the world.
Right. And then, besides all that, he also built the first temple.
Yeah.
Too. So there was gold everywhere.
Yeah.
So the amount of money that went through Israel at that time was really unbelievable.
Yeah. Now, the sad thing is, so he's the son of David. Right. So David's kingdom was definitely not the biggest economically or materialistic, but it was the golden age of Israel spiritually.
Right.
Solomon's was the golden age when it comes to science and economy and all this other stuff. Not so much spiritually. They were starting a downturn already.
Right. Well, and then when he left and his son took over, there was an immediate split then too.
Yeah. And that's what we see for the next 200 years, really, of Israel's history is 200-300 years.
Yeah. Right. So as the wealthiest and the wisest, Solomon wrote Ecclesiastes, and his purpose to me is he's trying to find out what's the meaning of life.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's some really well-known things, vanity of vanities and, chasing the wind and under the sun and all that stuff that we'll talk about. But what's interesting is that there are a couple of ways to read this. Some people read this book and they say, to use your phrase, well, Solomon is trying to figure this out. But when you get down to the end of the book, he's talking about his advanced age and he comes to a different conclusion. And so another perspective or another way to look at it is he's reminiscing on his way of trying to figure it out. And he's presenting, it's like, I'm not here anymore, but let me tell you what I went through coming to the conclusion that I did.
Right. And exactly. I think I was going that way too, because most of the times when you read a book or when you're in a classroom and there's a teacher teaching you something, they'll present a thesis or here's what we're going to be talking about. And then the rest of the lecture is going to be on why, points that, make that true. And that's not what Solomon does here.
Yeah.
Solomon kind of throws something out. List some things and is like, let me tweak that a little bit. Let me do something different with it. So like you said, early in life, maybe he felt this way. And then as with age and more wisdom, okay, here's what we settled on.
Yeah. It's almost like a confession in a sense. He's like, okay, so I tried it. I didn't inhale or I did inhale.
I tried
all this stuff. And, I'm telling you, kids.
It didn't get me anywhere.
It didn't get me anywhere, right? It's not worth it. So I want you to read it almost like his repentance letter, right? Yeah. It's not like, I thought or I do think all of this is right. It's like, take it from an old guy.
Right.
Here's what I, but he allows us to walk through the process with him.
Yeah, right. but we need to understand that too, because things he throws out in the beginning, he doesn't necessarily agree with at the end.
Right.
So it's really until the 12th chapter at the very end where we see where he landed.
Right. Yeah. And he'll make some positive things along the way. There's a ton of great stuff in here. There are some Proverbs in here. There are really a lot of general principles and timeless truths.
You can tell this guy wrote Proverbs.
Yeah. 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 Sometimes they're a little hidden and you have to go digging for them, but sometimes they're just like, yeah, right in your face. So yeah, it's well worth it. It's not just some people approach Ecclesiastes like, oh, this is just this boring book about how terrible everything is. Yes, but no.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So he starts out in chapter one with his meaning of life, and his conclusion so far is everything is futile.
Yeah. All right. Our next book is
like you say. Right? Okay. So then he gives his reasoning, and you can actually see why people agree with him. And at some point, I think everybody agrees at least a little bit with it, because he starts out with things like, "What benefit do people get from their effort on Earth?" I feel like that a lot.
That's
right?
A question. You know, why do we exist? Why are we here? Yeah. What is this worth it? I mean, you can rephrase this into
and he is saying no,
right?
Right. It is not. And then he gives a lot of reasoning, you know, the earth remains the same and, you know, and we can't affect nature. Now we got to remember this is 1,000 years ago too.
Right.
Or it was 1,000 BC. So 3,000 years ago.
Right.
But he says things like, you know, the sun rises and sets. I can't affect that at all.
Yeah.
The wind just seems to blow around the earth. All the streams flow into the sea. And the one I loved is, and the sea doesn't get full.
Yeah.
It's like, that is, wow.
Yeah. He's already talking about sea level rising 3,000 years ago. And he's like, folks, we can't change that.
Yeah. And then he says, it's monotonous, it's tiresome, and there is nothing truly new under the or on the earth.
Yeah. Now, there's a phrase that shows up, not in every translation. So some translations change it up a little bit. But if you go with more traditional English translation, there's nothing new under the sun. That phrase, under the sun, is really sort of like the key phrase, right? Because if you think of under the sun, you're talking about a humanistic or a worldly worldview. And if your whole mindset is just here, then here's your conclusion. Everything's futile, vanity of vanities, all is vanity, right? So what he is going to try to get us to do is stop looking under the sun and start looking beyond the sun. What is the bigger picture? What is out there that is not limited to this? Because if our whole perspective, if our whole life is limited to this, we are spinning our hamster wheels, right? And so that's what he's going to jump back and forth between these two worldviews, under the sun and what a friend of mine called beyond the sun. So that's what we're looking for.
Yeah. No, and I think that is, I think that's an awesome thing. Also notice he brings God in.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Right.
Right. And not when he's talking under the sun.
Right. When he starts talking about, this is what I've discovered about God, he's like, oh, let's peek through the under the sun thing. It's really similar, I think, to what Paul, I wonder if Paul was maybe thinking about this when he wrote Colossians 3, set your mind on things above, not on things on the earth. Real similar argument as to what Solomon has here.
Yeah. Now we need to remember that Solomon was a great king of the time, wealthiest, had the most wisdom, started the explorations, got more land for Israel. You know, then he decided, all right, now I'm going to examine everything here on earth to see if it's relevant or not.
Yeah.
And, his result was God has given people a burdensome task that keeps them occupied, right? So he's acknowledging God there, but from the standpoint of, oh, you're just keeping people busy.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't worth anything.
Pawns in a game, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So he reviewed everything that could be accomplished by man, and his conclusion, it's like chasing the wind, right? It's just futile.
Yeah.
And let's see, he said that he acquired wisdom and knowledge, so he discerned the benefit. That wisdom was better than being a fool, but it also seems like he tried to be a fool for a while too, which is really kind of interesting.
Well, and I think that's really when we look at people's lives and you say, you know, how could they do this? You know, how could they make decisions like that? Those are stupid decisions, or how could they, you know, end up like that? These are not intellectual things. These are not people don't go broke because they have no brains, or people don't go, you know, whatever. They don't have terrible lives because they're stupid people. You have very intelligent people that sometimes bad things happen to.
Right.
Sometimes it's just a bad decision. It doesn't mean that they're, you know, completely stupid or foolish or whatever. We have the wisest man in the world who made some really stupid decisions.
Right.
It's not a matter of intellect. It's a matter of worldview. It's a matter of there could be some spiritual influence in there. Of course, with him, there was the thing, spiritual influence. Another thing we should remember before we get too far in this is let's not forget the historical context. And that is Solomon is living under the Mosaic law and the Mosaic covenant at the time. So there are some things that he will say that have a direct connection to the law that may not apply to us directly today because we're not under that law. So we're still looking for general principles and timeless truths.
Yeah.
Not necessarily everything will connect directly. So I just wanted to throw that out while we're still early on here.
Yeah. So he decides he's going to try self-indulgent pleasures, right? He's not going to limit himself to anything.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got the bank account to do it.
He didn't need to limit anything.
So he indulged himself with parties, with wine, with increasing his possessions, mm-hmm. with houses, so that's plural,
mm-hmm.
on there, vineyards, royal gardens, parks, pools of water. He purchased male and female slaves, livestock. He had more livestock than anybody had ever had in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
He amassed gold, silver, and valuable treasures, acquired male and female singers, a harem of concubines. He said he didn't restrain himself from getting anything he wanted.
No. And if I remember correctly, as we read through 1 Kings, there was so much gold in Jerusalem at this point that people would not even pick silver up off the ground.
That silver was worthless. Mostly worthless.
Yeah. It's like, oh, what's it? Oh, it's just silver. I can't imagine living in that type of world where everything is so opulent that when everything is valuable, nothing is valuable. It doesn't matter.
Right.
Right? And I think that's sort of his point is like, there's no worth here.
Yeah, well, and that's exactly what he says. So here's what he said the reward for his effort was. All these possessions are profitless.
Yeah.
Like chasing the wind. There's nothing to be gained from them.
Yeah, yeah. So let's not forget, he never said having things was bad. He never said that the things themselves were bad, right? He said that the pursuit of those things, the chasing those things is meaningless. Is meaningless, right? They have an eternal value. But even Paul in 1 Timothy 6 said, God gives us all things to enjoy. And one of the things that we'll see here in Ecclesiastes, Solomon will repeatedly say, enjoy these things, enjoy these things, enjoy these things. You know, it's okay to enjoy these things. Well, how can you say enjoy, but also it's futile? Because it's not about the enjoyment, it's about the pursuit. If that's your whole goal in life, you're wasting your life. It's okay to enjoy them, but don't chase them, I think is the balance he's trying to...
Next, he considered gaining wisdom as well as foolish behaviors, and he realized, like I said, that wisdom is preferable to folly. So
at seems least like he got really that right. Yeah.
But he also realized that the benefit of wisdom is ultimately meaningless too.
Yeah,
you will not be remembered for long. The wise man dies just like the fool.
Yeah,
he's throwing these things out. He actually loathed all the hard work he did because he didn't see the benefit of it. His successor is going to see the benefit of it.
Right.
We have a great
example of that in Greek philosophy, right? So, you know, of Socrates and Plato, right? Plato, the only reason we know of Socrates is because Plato wrote down his stuff and said, this is what Socrates said, whatever, right? Socrates, from what I understand, never wrote any of his own stuff down. So brilliant mind. And had Plato not done anything with it, he would have been lost to history, right?
This is exactly what he's saying.
Yeah.
So the fruits of labor have to be handed over to a successor as an inheritance to someone who didn't work for it.
Mm-hmm.
It's futile and an awful injustice. Now, today, I mean, think about today when we're alive, we go in to do a job. There is so much things that are already there that have been built upon people from the past that we just take for granted.
Yeah.
Right? I got an iPad here.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's amazing the technology that's in here.
Yeah, I didn't build this.
If
there were another flood or something like that.
Yeah, you got to start over.
I have to start over.
How hurt would we be?
Yeah, who's building?
I can't make a hammer.
Who's building your cell phone?
Yeah. Right.
Who's building the cell phone towers?
Right. And all that information gets lost in one generation, too.
Yeah.
So it is like you're starting over. And I know he was 3,000 years ago. a lot of it was starting over.
Yeah.
So I kind of get where he's coming from here.
Yeah.
And he ends this chapter one with, there's nothing better. So now he's kind of revised, or I see he's revising his everything is futile to, here's the best I got.
Yeah.
Enjoy what you eat, enjoy what you drink, and find enjoyment in your work.
And I think that's a really good balance because, again, 1 Timothy 6, God gives us all things to enjoy. We are supposed to enjoy the planet. We are supposed to enjoy stuff, right? But again, we're not supposed to chase it. So where's that balance between finding what is worth chasing and enjoying the ride as we go along?
Right.
Right.
And he does explore that more too.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. So then we get into chapter 3, and hopefully you're old when you're watching this, because there's a song in here. So there was a song in this chapter by a band by the name of The Birds, named Turn, 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 1960s. I think it was late 50s, early 60s. That was before me.
I wasn't in that.
I'll give, you'll hear some lines. So Solomon kind of states his thesis, and now it's, there's an appointed time for everything.
Yeah.
And then he lists 14 things and 14 opposites of it. This is actually what makes up the song, Turn, Turn, Turn.
Yeah, they came right to Ecclesiastes 3 and just copied straight.
You can see people sitting around, some guy going, I got an idea. but for example, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to kill, a time to heal.
And these opposites, right? Yeah.
Right in there. So he continues and says, what can a worker gain from his toil? God has given people a burden to keep them occupied. He's also given them ignorance so they can't discover what he has ordained.
Yeah. So here's actually a translation thing in this verse. We're looking at the NET translation here. He has placed ignorance in the human heart so that people cannot discover what God has ordained, which you just read. Yep. Some translations say God has placed eternity in their hearts so that they can't know. And so some people look at that and say, that is the thing that is in each person that is searching for God that nothing else can fill, that God hole, that God-shaped hole that nothing else can fill. And this was the best way that Solomon was able to describe that. He's like, there is something in me that I have tried everything and it just doesn't quite fill it, right? Yeah. And here, verse 11. So depending on what translation you're reading, it may say ignorance, it may say darkness, it may say eternity even, and people interpret it differently.
So Solomon concluded that the best a person can do, again, is eat, drink, and find enjoyment. And,
so this is twice now, right?
Yeah, yeah. And he does come back to this a number of times. Mm-hmm. But now he acknowledges that this is a gift from God, and whatever God does will endure forever, mm-hmm. and nothing can be added and subtracted from it, and whatever exists now has already been. So you can see he took his original thing, and now it's morphing a little bit. Now there's some God going on in here.
Which, with the whole eat, drink thing, it makes me think of 1 Corinthians 10, whether you eat or drink, do all to the glory of God. Yeah. So if this really did come from God, we have, I mean, it's not exactly the same as Paul said, but you know, here we are, you know, 1,000 years before Paul, Solomon is saying eating and drinking can actually glorify God as well. You know, from God, if you're doing it God's way, you can enjoy it, and that's okay.
Yeah. So now he's stuck with, now he's on this thesis, and then he comes up with, but I see on earth, there should be justice, but there was wickedness. Where there should be fairness, I found wickedness, you know, and the other way around, where there was wickedness, you know. And he's like, okay, God's going to judge both of these. Both the righteous and the wickedness are wicked, and there's a time for that. And he's like, all right, but there's no difference really between humans and animals.
Yeah.
Both live, both die, both come from dust and are going to return to dust. Who really knows if the human spirit, you know, goes upward?
Yeah. So again, is this an under the sun perspective? Is this I didn't used to know this, but I do know this? 1,000 years before Solomon, Job said, I know that my Redeemer lives and that he shall stand on the last day on this earth. And in my flesh, I will see God. So Job talked about a type of a resurrection, right? Of course, we know about a resurrection more than than Solomon did. Right. So this is a great verse that helps us remember, okay, at his point in time, there were things he didn't know.
Right.
He didn't have a fully fleshed out doctrine of the resurrection. The prophets later talked about a kingdom that everybody was going to be in. So obviously there was some kind of resurrection. But the progressive, the cumulative, the progression of revelation that God has given over time helps us remember, you know, as wise as he was, he didn't know everything.
Right. But he's searching, right? And he put God into his thesis, and then he's poking holes at it saying, but if God is in there, why don't the wicked always succeed? Or why don't the just always succeed? And why wouldn't the wicked always get bad results?
Right.
And, you know, he's not seeing it. So he's like, okay, you know, is there a God?
Yep.
What am I missing here?
Yeah.
So I see him struggling at this point.
And so again, we have to decide, and I don't know that we can know this, but by the time we get to the end of Ecclesiastes, he's already made his decision. Yeah. So this seems to be a reflection. He's drawing us in. He wants us to ask these questions. He wants us to feel this tension so that then when he gets ready to resolve it, we're like, okay. And that tension is actually released. So he's saying, I wonder if maybe he was saying some things intentionally provocative.
Or like you said, that he thought at that point in his life.
Yeah. 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 I mean, we know there's a difference between humans and animals.
Yeah. Right. And, I mean, obviously he knew that too.
But... You would think.
But well, maybe they're at one treated point differently.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe at one point he didn't, yeah. You know, maybe, you know, I don't know. I don't know. Right.
All right. And that takes us to the end of chapter 3.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're already deep in the weeds at this point, just in the first 3 chapters.
Right.
So we have only a couple of weeks to go, and we'll work our way through this. But hopefully, take it slowly. This is not a book where you can just read it fast and just, okay, I got my reading in for today and just go. Take it slowly. Consider the things that he's asking. Allow him to, like I said, allow him to build that tension, right? Allow yourself to wrestle with some of these ideas. We're not to create doubt, but it's okay to ask questions. I think God likes it when we ask questions, when we use our brain to wrestle with these things.
Right.
And this is not the end, right? So it's okay to be here while we're here. So if you've asked some of these questions before, if you've wrestled with this same idea, I think you'll enjoy these couple of weeks here in Ecclesiastes. Always feel free to reach out, ask questions, just say, hey, yeah, I've wrestled with these things and, you know, I really appreciate that Solomon was wrestling with some of the same things as well. Share and follow and subscribe and do all the things that we do online these days. And we'll see you back here next time.